This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Hey everyone, you're listening to WRFL Lexington, and for the next hour, you're going to hear me, your host Kay, talk about gay stuff here on The Gay Show. It is always a fun time hanging out, shouting into the void, however you want to describe those things. Today, I am sort of joined by my co-host Emma. We're hanging out. She's been a WRFL member for much longer than me, so she knows what she's doing. She's sort of in the background doing stuff. So if anyone joins us, that's why. So again, I'm your host, Kay. You are listening to The Gay Show, where for the next hour, we'll talk about LGBTQ+ issues, feelings, thoughts, media, basically whatever I want to talk about from week to week. Last week, we talked about non-binary identities. So effectively what a non-binary identity is and what it might mean and how it influences how we understand our own gender, as well as what it means for our own sexual identity. And effectively, I came to the conclusion that there is no good conclusion, and everyone should really try and figure out what that means for themselves, because at the end of the day, identities are going to be highly specific, with sort of two broader definitions of non-binary identities, which is effectively identifying completely off of the binary, but still as a gender, so not man, not woman, not on the spectrum, but something else entirely, or non-binary as in I do not subscribe to the notion of gender at all. And understanding the nuances of that in relation to all other gender identities and sexual orientation got very quirky and complicated and still sort of confused about it. So that was last week. And this week we're going to take a little bit different of a turn. Normally, I talk about sort of a current issue, a topic, a gray area that we're still sort of working through, like how to navigate relationships, identities. Non-binary identities is something relatively new. And this time, we're going to take a step back and talk a little bit more about cultural identities, history, and what that history means for us today. So, basically, we'll be talking about bears and bear culture, not the animal. We'll be talking about Tom of Finland, a famous, unsurprisingly Finnish artist from sort of 70s, 80s time period, the AIDS crisis, and how all three of those things sort of navigate and work together, or I guess woven together, and now the production of new identities and understanding of these identities, specifically bisexuality and pansexuality. So, that's what we'll be talking about. I've discussed these topics before, but not quite as effectively all in the same conversation. So hopefully you think the transitions are smooth, and I will pretend that they were smooth, and it'll be a great time. So, talking about subcultures, right, talking about bears, right, gay subcultures broadly, and understanding what it means to have a sort of artistic presence or cultural impact to these subcultures and how those subcultures sort of develop on their own and carve out a space for themselves and why they need to carve out a space for themselves. So, first off, I should probably describe what a subculture is, right? We all know what a cultural group is or cultural groups are. They're basically a group of individuals bound together by a set of beliefs, rules, practices, or any sort of other identifying characteristics. So Chinese people have cultural practices that are specific to people who are Chinese, right? That's not particularly surprising and makes sense. So a subculture then is a specific group within that bigger cultural context or that bigger group. So for example, there are many different regions in China, all of which have slightly different variations and slightly different sort of beliefs and practices and cultures within what it means to be a Chinese person, right? In some ways, you can also think of it as like a state, right? Like, as someone who spent a decade in the state of Texas, I can very much so tell you that Texas has its own culture. It's absolutely a thing. 100%. That's just how Texas is. But when you are in Texas, you are still an American, right? So in that way, you can think of being a Texan or Texas culture as a subcategory or a subculture of what it means to be American. So subculture. So now that we've sort of broken that down, let's talk about bear culture, which is always really, really fun, right? Bears are not something you might necessarily know about or necessarily know what it is, except for the fact that bears are cool and animals are cool and talking about bears is fun. However, we are not going to be talking about those animals. Instead, we're going to be talking about individuals, typically those who are gay, but any identity besides those who are heterosexual effectively can identify as a bear. So a bear is someone who is not straight, is often very masculine, hairy, and large, based off of physical size and stature. There are also additional identifiers. So they're physically large, based on stature, and very hairy. They're also often very, very masculine, and yes, they're very masculine, very large, very hairy, right? So literally what a bear looks like, the identity isn't particularly distinct, right? It's, oh, this is what a bear is. Bears are large, hairy individuals, because that's how bears work. And then you also end up with, like, smaller signifiers within bear culture, and essentially you can think of it as variations on what it means to be a bear. So additional identifiers such as being a cub, which is unsurprisingly a younger, physically smaller, and in effect more submissive version of a bear. So often someone, like very literally a baby bear, right? As well as otters, which don't necessarily function as a go-between, right? So an otter is clearly a much different class of animal than a cub or a bear. So rather, they tend to be muscular and fit versions of a bear, sort of like a twink or a twink meets bear, which we will get to later on. Right, so essentially you can think of a bear as someone who is often very, very physically large in stature, usually due to the fact that they are just like very big boned or they're very heavy set. And then those who are otters are typically slightly more muscular and slightly more fit in nature. And then cubs are essentially the smaller versions of bears for any number of reasons. So if otters are not necessarily the go-between of cubs and bears, rather they sort of resemble the combination of what it means to be a twink and what it means to be a bear. What is a twink? So it's, in some ways, the idealized standard or the idealized status of what it means to be a gay man. Twinks are typically seen as very fit, toned, smooth, and in particular, like, youthful. So I often like to describe twinks as like Troye Sivan, but I am learning increasingly that people don't always know who that is. So another good example is sort of the like youthful Greco-Roman relationship sort of vibe. So those individuals would be twinks. They often receive the most media attention, right? Those are the people who are most familiar to us and the people who are most attractive or most traditionally attractive in a lot of ways. right? Because in our current society, those who are youthful, thin, and fit are unsurprisingly going to get the most attention because that is what we have deemed most attractive. That idealized state happens to be what we refer to as a twink in gay communities. And I use the word gay a little bit more loosely, but in reality, these identities are typically much more bound to masculine identities, or men in particular. Although there are certainly women and lesbian women who identify as bears and are a part of this culture, these specific identities tend to be much, much more common among those who identify as male as well. So one of the things that also binds bears, otters, and cubs together is, one, not only hair, right? All three of those animals are very hairy, but also very masculine. Twinks, on the other hand, can essentially vary in their level of femininity and masculinity, unlike what is traditionally expected of bears and bear culture, wherein you're expected to be more masculine, right? I've sort of mentioned this several times, and in particular, bears and cubs tend to be like overweight or fat, and I use the word fat not as a stigmatizing word, but as something that can be positive and reclaimed, right? People are just that way in many different ways, and that's okay, and that's great. So people who are bears and or cubs are often much heavier, whereas twinks tend to be much more fit. So as I've mentioned, twinks, simply because their identifiers align with broader cultural norms of what's attractive and beautiful, often get the most attention from media, as well as being the most sought after body, right? We all sort of have this idealized body in our head of what we want to look like, after making our like New Year's resolution, inevitably failing at it before going to the gym. Twinks are that group of people, or that identity essentially. So then bear cult, and it's important to recognize that that is not attainable for everyone, right? I cannot be 6 foot, 120 pounds, and ripped. That's like literally impossible. Mostly because I can't really get taller or get ripped. So that's just how it is. Bear culture then, and often these other identities typically function as something that I would argue is actually protective, because it allows gay men, and really men who are not heterosexual, to find others who are supportive and look like them. When we are a part of a culture, we typically want to see ourselves reflected back at us, right? I don't think that's necessarily something that's particularly uncommon or new or surprising, right? That's just what it means to have a culture. And at the end of the day, our bodies are not all built to look like twinks no matter what we want to do, right? That's just not possible. And when we have a culture, we want to see ourselves reflected back from that culture. And accepting this, so accepting the fact that I am a member of an LGBTQ community, but my body type does not match the sort of idealized body type, then puts me at odds with essentially this culture and community that I want to be a part of, because it's really important to me as a sexual minority individual, but an idealized state that I will never be able to reach just based on how biology works. And trying to understand those things can really sort of push people at odds and cause a lot of tension and discomfort. And in just a second, when we get back, we'll talk about like what it means to hold those subcultural identities and how those things can contribute to reducing that discomfort. Hey everyone, we are back. My name is Kay, and I'm your host for The Gay Show, where for the next 45 minutes we'll talk about gay stuff. And today in particular, we're talking about bears, and in just a moment we'll transition to essentially a little piece of art history and the AIDS crisis and what it means to hold a masculine identity, particularly as part of a subculture, and how that impacts the way in which we navigate those identities. So right before we left off, I was essentially describing what a bear was and various other subculture identities, or really just specific identities within the broader sort of gay male community. In particular, focusing on what it means to be a bear, specifically the fact that bears are often large, hairy, heavyset, and masculine, right? Similar to a regular bear. And I was talking essentially about the fact that what it means to be a bear, just to have that body type, because many people just look like that, right? I can't really control sort of naturally the amount of hair on my body. I can't really control my height, right? Those are not things that are available to change for me. So if I am a part of a community, so if I'm a member of an LGBT community, let's say in Lexington, and I am a bear, or I'm just someone who does not fit an idealized standard of beauty, although this community might be very important to me, I might feel at odds with it because my body type does not match what I feel like it should be as a representative of an LGBTQ community. So then I suggest that bear culture sort of developed and is continuing to thrive today for a million different reasons, as any sort of cultural group is, but one of those reasons is the fact that bear culture functions as a protective group within LGBTQ communities, particularly when you think about sought-after body image for men. So, when you think about this sort of idealized body image, so I was talking about twinks, which is just like a fun word to say over and over again. Right, at the end of the day, that is an idealized body type for many people, but it's not actually something that is physically attainable for any number of reasons. So trying to accept that I can't be like that while still being a member of this community and having to give up this idealized sort of self can be really uncomfortable. So then not only might I have to struggle sort of giving up that idealized self, but as someone who is a bear or part of a bear culture, chances are I'm also very heavyset, right? I was earlier talking about the fact that people who are bears are often fat, which is good and wonderful and an important part of that cultural identity. But it also means that I am not only excluded from society broadly because I am gay or just not heterosexual, but you also end up with the struggle of being someone who is heavy set in society. So then not only do you not quite fit in with society because you're not straight, you also end up not quite fitting in to an LGBTQ community because you're overweight. And this is not to suggest that these communities are like particularly hostile to people who are not super fit, but rather what you imagine and what you look for in an LGBTQ community, and really many... Well, wasn't that a quirky interlude? Hot break? The fire alarm went off, so you didn't get to hear me talk about bears for the last 10 minutes. But if you can just imagine me awkwardly repeating myself for the last 10 minutes about bears and what bears are, then you basically didn't miss anything at all. So we're going to sort of speed up the talk at this point, because the fire alarm went off, and I was unprepared for that. But basically, we were talking about the fact that bear culture in some ways functions as a protective community for those whose body types do not fit the idealized mold, as well as for those who identify as LGBTQ+, right? So you end up with this subculture that is protective for specifically that group of people. And that's really important. Because not only do you want a culture that reflects your identity broadly, but when you look at your cultural group, you want to see yourself reflected back in it. And I think that's really cool and important and great. And in the last 30 minutes or so, you may have noticed that I keep mentioning, in addition to body type, the presence of masculinity. So the ability to vary in one's masculinity or the portrayal of it, are all important for these groups, and I'd argue for men everywhere. I say this not to suggest that we need to necessarily increase or decrease our own masculinity, right? Masculinity serves a number of different roles for a number of different people, but we should be aware of our own masculinity and how that masculinity is perceived. And this masculinity becomes increasingly important within the context of the AIDS crisis, as well as Tom of Finland impacting these cultural identities. So thinking about bear culture and the LGBTQ plus communities broadly, understanding how masculinity and essentially sexual practices work together to then sort of create a specific context and space, work to build a specific context and space that then was differentially impacted by the AIDS crisis. And this is like sort of an awkward pivot, but here we are. So I mentioned earlier Tom of Finland, who is this unsurprisingly Finnish artist who arguably is one of the most influential forces in gay pornographic art ever. He sort of came to fame in the 70s and 80s. All of his work was extremely hyper-masculine, and I don't necessarily suggest you immediately go onto the internet and look up Tom of Finland's work, but I'm guessing for many of you, you might actually recognize parts of those art styles. So his work typically showcased extremely muscular and disproportionate bodies, usually in uniforms of some sort, and especially those in authoritative position or authoritative power, so cops, soldiers, and bikers as characters were not particularly uncommon in Tom of Finland's work. So it really only served to further this idea of hypermasculinity, right? So not only am I a soldier or a police officer, which is someone who is traditionally considered masculine, but my biceps are also the size of watermelons because my body is ridiculously disproportioned and exclusively muscle. They kind of look ridiculous and are hypermasculine and hypersexualized for a number of different reasons. But I would suggest that this further contributes to an idealized hypersexual and hypermasculine self, particularly for those who are male or male identifying, of one who is very masculine, who is very dominant and very powerful, which isn't necessarily good or bad. It just is. Right? So you can be someone who is dominant and powerful and sexual and masculine without necessarily being bad. We just happen to associate all of those things together. It's just something that is. And I would suggest that it, in relation to the AIDS crisis, also functioned to develop new types of culture, and maybe not a culture in the same way that we might think about culture, but at least a very specific group of people with sets of practices that make them unique from other groups of individuals. I am sort of jokingly, but not jokingly, referring to what we might refer to as gay gym culture. So for those of you who are in LGBTQ plus communities, particularly those who are male identifying, gay gym culture is like a very specific group of gay people, which we sort of talk about in very specific ways, but in reality, it's really just the same as regular gym culture, but like much more intense and gay. And what is sort of interesting is that oftentimes among gay men who are in gym culture and who are working out very excessively as part of this community, they aren't really working like their entire body, right? Like the workout and the muscles are often for aesthetic purposes, not necessarily to like fight someone, which is sort of neither here nor there and will become important later on, but is something that's really interesting because you can sort of think about it as a form of body modification, right? We can think about all exercise as a form of body modification because we are very literally changing our bodies and isn't necessarily permanent, but not all body modification is permanent, right? But it's really interesting to think about that because if you have an artist who is coming to sort of fame right before this AIDS crisis, who is contributing and sort of helping to develop this idea of a hyper-masculine, sort of dominant, powerful cultural identity, inevitably later on, you will have people who are in some ways emulating that identity regardless of whether or not it is intentional, isn't necessarily relevant. And I say this not as like Tom of Finland caused this thing and that is why this culture exists. Rather, it is one player in a million different players contributing and developing this culture and impacting other cultural identities, basically like everything else. But it's an interesting sort of piece to talk about. And in just a moment, we'll sort of talk about and pull together Tom of Finland as a concept and cultural piece, gay gym culture, which I always find fun to talk about, bear culture and masculinity, and we'll talk about why those things mattered and what they mean in the context of the HIV/AIDS crisis of, I would suggest, 70s to 90s, but generally speaking, considered in the 80s. Okay, so we are back. I'm Kay. You're listening to The Gay Show, where we talk about gay stuff. In the last 10 minutes or so, we were talking about Tom of Finland, who is a very, very famous gay pornographic artist, right? So he made hypersexual images and drawings that are honestly really beautiful, but not something I would hand out in the streets, given how we perceive sexual behavior. But anyways, we were talking about Tom of Finland and his cultural impact in terms of how that additionally contributed to what it means to have a hypermasculine body, particularly in this scenario for muscle. And that matters when you think about the AIDS crisis. And all of these different groups matter, particularly bears and cubs and gay gym culture, in the sense of these are groups that have high body fat or high muscles. The muscle to like fat ratio is really, really high for those who are in gay gym culture, and the inverse for those who are bears and cubs. And those things matter when you think about the AIDS crisis, because one of the hallmark sort of symptoms of having AIDS, so following HIV, following contraction, the disease developing, is what we refer to as muscular atrophy. So it's essentially the sort of like wasting away of one's body and the degeneration or the loss of muscles, which isn't uncommon among any sort of autoimmune disease, which is basically what HIV/AIDS is. But in some ways, it's really interesting to think about from an evolutionary context or an evolutionary psychology context, which is really the only time I have not thought evolutionary psychology was something you should immediately toss out the window. But think about it this way. So if you have a widespread disease that's associated with wasting away, this then exacerbates the stigmatization of bodies who attempt to reach an unattainable image when they already have the odds stacked against them, such as those who are bears and in gay gym culture, right? If you are having a very widespread disease that is associated with losing muscle mass and mass in general, you then have another odd stacked against you. So, what it means then is, from an evolutionary psych standpoint, the way in which we often talk about evolution among like sort of mating and sexual selection, which is where we get like very biologically focused, our cultural practices and behaviors and visibility in many animals is considered a signal of our fitness, right? So when we talk about sexual dimorphism, when we talk about like peacocks and lions, right, like peacock tails and lion's manes, in terms of existing and functioning in the wild, objectively bad, right? Like having what is effectively a giant scarf around your face constantly when you are in the savannah is not great and really hot, just like carrying around a giant ridiculous tail in the middle of a forest. But what those things mean is essentially, I am so great at being this animal that I can afford like an extra weight to live because I am really great. So what you end up with in gay culture, and this is like sort of a weak translation, but I think in some ways makes it an interesting way of thinking about how we treat our bodies, if you have this disease that is associated with wasting away, and you end up in a cultural practice or in a cultural community that's really important to you that is associated with having heavy body fat or having very large muscles, what those things additionally signal to people is that I'm healthy, right? So if I'm able to maintain a high level of body fat as someone who is a bear, or I'm able to maintain a high level of muscle, then it arguably suggests to people around me that I am not, that I don't have AIDS. And in the context of the 80s and 90s, it also might suggest that I'm someone who is not gay. And those things become particularly important when we're thinking about the AIDS crisis, because for those of you who are unaware, right, so the AIDS crisis took place all over the world and arguably is still taking place today in many other parts of the world. But between the early 80s and the late 80s, about 70,000 gay and bisexual men, or just really those who engage in, it's like men who have sex with men is our typical designation, about 70,000 people died from HIV/AIDS in that decade period. And although that's still technically a very small proportion of the LGBTQ plus population in the United States, and I say 70,000 just in the US, what the real product of that crisis was, although death is clearly very important and very visible, the actual product of that was fear, right? So if you are a young gay person and you see tens of thousands of gay people dying in major cities, you're not going to want to be openly proud and visible to be gay. So in some ways, on a sort of innate level, one might be able to suggest that if I am someone who is heavy in body fat or very muscular, I then suggest that I don't have AIDS and therefore I'm not gay. Because you end up with this association during the AIDS crisis of, if you are a gay man, you have AIDS, and you are going to give people around you AIDS. And that's arguably and unfortunately still very much a sort of deep-seated stereotype today, which hopefully with the advent of PrEP, which if you're unaware, PrEP is like a prophylactic for HIV. It's essentially birth control for HIV, right? If I take PrEP every single day, the chances of me getting or contracting HIV from engaging in sexual behavior with someone with HIV is almost zero. So with the advent of that, hopefully we no longer have this association of gay equals AIDS or some sort of fear stereotype. But in the meantime, in the 80s and 90s, and still today, one might suggest that having that sort of body then helps to contribute to signal that you are not those things, right? You don't have a disease, you're not necessarily gay, and you're safe. And that's a really weird way to think about it. And again, one small piece of a larger puzzle, but I think it's a really interesting way of thinking about our cultural practices without necessarily having the quirky, insidious sexual selection dynamic going on, right? It's essentially, okay, unintentionally or non-consciously, I know that there is this disease that makes gay people look like this and is associated with gay people. And if I am a gay person and I am working out, not only can I prevent this disease effectively or prevent looking like it, but I can also signal that I'm a safe person or keep myself safe. Because if I am a muscular, heavyset person in the 80s and 90s, people will just assume I'm not gay because I don't have AIDS, which is a really weird and uncomfortable like set of logical steps, but almost certainly something that has frequently happened, particularly in that time period. So I find that really interesting to think about. And it's not necessarily the like best sort of supporting evidence, but when you think about it in that evolutionary context or in those sets of behaviors, it does sort of make a little bit more sense, particularly when you think about gay gym culture as a form of body modification, encouraging sort of aesthetic more so than literal fitness or being fit. And we actually find that many people who have HIV actually engage in anabolic steroid use, particularly when they work out at the gym. And this is like fine because using steroids is legal and fine if you are not like in a competitive sport, and in some ways medicinal for someone who might have AIDS to prevent muscular atrophy. But I think it sort of lends support to this idea that we inevitably have this sort of non-conscious set of behaviors to signal health. And I think it's a really interesting way of thinking about it without necessarily putting down another group, right? So oftentimes when we think about evolutionary practices, it comes at the expense of another identity, right? So men are dominant, therefore women should be submissive, which is not a great sort of train of thought. But if we think about as in, I'm going to be super fit to suggest and make sure that I am safe and protected, is an evolutionary practice that we can try and understand without necessarily putting down other groups. And I find thinking about that in that sort of way, in that context, amidst all of the other reasons why those things exist, really interesting and really fascinating, because it's not quite something you might think about normally. So that's generally how I feel about bears and gay gym culture and understanding the AIDS crisis in Tama, Finland. That was a million different things. And if you find that really, really interesting, feel free to email the station and I can give you my show notes. It'll be a great time. But I also wanted to touch on a little bit sort of the HIV and AIDS crisis right now. So for those of you who are unaware, more than a million people were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS in the last, in 2015 to 2016, more than a million people were diagnosed with HIV/AIDS roughly. And about half of those diagnoses were in Russia, which if you've been following Russian politics is not particularly surprising, but in many other parts of the world, HIV/AIDS isn't actually associated with gay people, but is actually associated with African-American individuals or drug use, or I guess not African-American because they would not be American in this context, but it's still very much so an issue in developing countries and now in Russia as well. So even though we think about HIV/AIDS as something that is over and done with, and we have certainly reduced sort of the prevalence of HIV/AIDS, it is certainly something that is important to be thinking about, particularly in the Midwest and the South, given the way in which we treat healthcare. So arguably, there was actually a big outbreak of HIV prevalence in Indiana in the last 3 years, for a host of different reasons, including lack of needle exchange programs, sexual education and health, all of those different things. And that's definitely way off track from where we initially started. But I think understanding and having knowledge of HIV/AIDS in today's world is really important because it is not something that happened in the 80s and is something we don't have to think about anymore. It's still definitely something we need to be talking about today in reducing the stigma of this person has HIV/AIDS, so they are bad and evil and I can't be near them. So that was my soapbox, in addition to talking about what a bear is and the AIDS crisis and a weird, quirky evolutionary psychology take on cultural practices amidst the AIDS crisis. So there you go. My name is Kay. That was The Gay Show. I hope you enjoyed our quirky, half-shortened show amidst a fire alarm and talking about bears. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.